Welcome to the Talking Poem Podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Green. This is a short-form episode where I usually talk about a poem or something I've noticed in a few poems. I don't like to talk in these about very current issues or about poems I don't like, but I feel compelled to do so today because there's something has happened that I keep thinking about. The Academy of American Poets has a poem a day feature where you can sign up to get a poem in your email each day. Poetry Foundation does this as well. There's also Poetry Daily, Verse Daily. And with any poem a day feature, I think there's going to be hit and miss, mainly because you can't like every poem. Not everything will be to your aesthetic or interest. The Academy of American Poets, I do want to note, they do a lot of very good work recovering forgotten and lesser known poets through this feature and bringing them to people. However, I want to focus on the poem that they sent out on March 29th. Which was Jesus Fridge by the poet Jeffrey McDaniel. I want to say at the outset, I don't know him personally, and I'm not really that familiar with his poems. That's not intended as an insult. There are just too many poems and too many poets. He's published a couple books. They're well-reviewed. But I want to read the poem and talk about some of the issues that arise that are part of the problem here. The Jesus Fridge. Your fridge died last week. The light still came on when you opened the door, like a doll sticking out her yellow tongue. But the jar of pickle spears, the oat milk in its blue cardboard house, the yogurt were warm as an average day in Santa Monica. A couple $100 of provisions down the figurative drain. A new fridge, a vertical morgue with shelves, was ordered and set to be delivered from the truck's womb. When, wait, the dead fridge came back to life. The Jesus Fridge. The dead food healthy again. This phrase was funny to you last week. The collision of the mundane and mechanical with the long-haired and sanctimonious. But it's not funny today. The world has changed. This is a George Floyd moment for both Israelis and Palestinians. Actually, scratch that. It's a George Floyd moment for both Americans who sympathize with Israel and Americans who sympathize with Palestinians. It's a holy fuck moment for anyone who cares about human life. Upstairs, the bathtub is filling with blood. How big would the swimming pool have to be to hold all the red salty stuff spilled the last week? Who will recline in the fresh blood bath? What swimmers will adjust their goggles in freestyle, the miles of blood? So first, I want to gloss the issue that a lot of people have with the poem itself, which is the mention of Israel and Palestine through the lens of the George Floyd moment. There is something the poem, I think, is trying to do that's interesting. It's a George Floyd moment for both Israelis and Palestinians. It says, actually, scratch that. It's a George Floyd moment for both Americans who sympathize with Israel and Americans who sympathize with Palestinians. And I think it's trying to signal an awareness of the speaker's own distance from this issue and that the speaker doesn't necessarily have a great grasp of it. But I don't think that that's actually what really comes through from that. I think what really comes through is a kind of confusion about what he's actually getting at. It ends up being, I think, a shallow way of understanding George Floyd, Israel, and Palestine. The George Floyd moment, quote unquote, it's this media phrase meaning generally, look, people are protesting, which I think is a really odd lens for understanding anger and the collective response of protest. And shifting it to those who sympathize with Palestinians and those who sympathize with Israelis is just such a boiling down of power into nothing. They're simply equal, and the people who support them, they sympathize. It's kind of minimized in this strange way. As I hope is obvious, I'm on the side of Palestinian liberation. Israel's committing genocide with our American support, financial and military. Israel has the power in that dynamic. And so it's a little strange to see the poem gloss over that. But even if you're on the side of Israel, you'd probably be bothered, I would imagine. The poem ends up reading kind of like a standard all violence is bad statement without any elaboration or context. I feel like you could just as easily sub Russia and Ukraine or Armenia and Azerbaijan, and the poem would function basically the same way. And I find that really frustrating, given the fact that it's being shared on March 29th, and it's a poem which, as I'll tell you in a moment, was written right after October 7th. One of the features of the Academy of American Poets, Poem a Day, is with contemporary poets, they have an about this poem that the writer has provided. This is the about this poem that McDaniel wrote. This poem was written on October 13th, 2023, in one sitting. The poem is pinned to a moment in time, a hinge moment. The majority of my poems go through a vigorous series of revisions. In this instance, I resisted that impulse as I didn't want to fall into the trap of revising the poem to try and keep pace with the escalating and profoundly disturbing violence. End quote. A lot of people were annoyed by the idea that he didn't revise the poem, in part because I think he's seeing revision the wrong way. He's assuming that if he were to revise the poem, he would have to keep up with the current events, when I think there are other ways of thinking about he can revise the poem. Because if he wants to capture this moment of October 13th, there's potentially something really fascinating to deal with in terms of either the ignorance of Americans or empathy or how we react to mass violence. But it doesn't really do that. And I mean, I take artist statements with a grain of salt. But if we take it at face value or not, exactly what made it a hinge moment? A hinge from what to what? And honestly, for whom? October 7th has become the rallying cry and excuse for Israel's most recent war crimes. But I feel like that's a facile way to view what's happening and for how long it's been happening. You can certainly call it a hinge moment in terms of this ends up becoming a major move from the oppression of the people of Gaza to the attempts at ethnic cleansing and genocide. But it just ends up feeling very strange that the poem is essentially agnostic on Israel-Palestine, that it mentions really nothing specific. And I feel like it's just trying not to come down on any side when I think that I don't see why a poem like this is trying to add something. I do want to say that there are things in the poem that I like. The images, I think, do have a compelling force if you divorce them from their context. There's something about some of the sensibility here I find interesting. The taking the phrase bloodbath and making it literal, that image of the swimmer swimming through blood, I think is really powerful. And I like the idea of this odd little joke about the Jesus fridge being the narrative spark of the poem, even if the poem does over-explain it a little bit. All of this said, my frustration ultimately isn't with McDaniel here. And I say this because I've written facile political poems. I've resisted the impulse to revise. I've tried writing about something and inserting my perspective where it's either not useful or it's actively harmful. My frustration here is with the Academy of American Poets. Why do we need this poem on March 29th? Why draw this to so many people's attention at this point? A million Palestinians are on the brink of starvation. Around 44% of Palestinian casualties are children. The claims that were made about Hamas with mass rape and baby killing on October 7th have been retracted. Plenty of Israeli political and military figures have described what they're doing, both implicitly and explicitly, as ethnic cleansing and genocide. The proportions of deaths of children, journalists, and aid workers is unusually high, even by the standards, if standards is all the right word, of colonial war. The editor for the poem of the day has made the mistake here in having no sense of what's going on and what voices and aesthetics matter right now. Sometimes poets can't get far enough from the page to understand what they're missing. That's in large part where an editor comes in. I want to add one note about the context in which this has happened, and that is that a lot of people feel, and I agree, that organizations like the Poetry Foundation, like PEN America, have not done enough to support free speech and the needs of writers and readers in the way that they could and should. And so it feels, I think, for a lot of people, like another instance of a literary organization dismissing the experience, the voices, and the needs of people who are close to this situation. With that in mind, I'd like to end on a poem by Fadi Judah. The poem is titled Ellipsis. It is quite literally an ellipsis. Judah is a Palestinian-American poet, translator, and physician. He volunteers with Doctors Without Borders. He's published several books of poetry as well as award-winning translations. He's also lost a lot of family members during this current genocide. Because I want to give his poem the last word, I want to note a couple things about it. First, to the Academy of American Poets' credit, this was their poem of the day on April 2nd. Second, I love the directness and the force of the poem and the ways it challenges ideas about empathy and about witness from afar. There are other things I like about it, but I think it's really beautifully done. I'm going to read the poem, but if you prefer to hear it in his voice, I've included the link in the show notes to where you can read the poem and listen to Judah reading it. So, thanks for listening. Here is Ellipsis. Still they ask in podcast and electronic ink, how are you doing? And they keep you in their hearts, pump you to their minds, circulate you unimagined. Take all the space you need, they say. Empathy loves the damaged. You offer no solutions, only clarity they don't believe, only they get to tell the future what to be. Then they pump you into their viscera and feel you bilious, ineffable, cast iron, butterfly. Their questions, like a shovel that doesn't know what earth is, but digging anyway. They hope you would say, I am multi-generational and can fracture natural bonds in my DNA. For this, they can sell to a tycoon press, a Carnegie of thought dissemination. And your answer comes, things are a seasickness and no land in sight. Your peeping is no witness.